Justice Radio. This episode is part of our series about surviving harm and the relationship between accountability, healing, and justice in relation to our criminal legal system. I'm Catherine Besteman, an abolitionist educator at Colby College and the coordinator of the Freedom in Captivity Initiative. Our guests today are Brianna Herman Brand, Matthew Kamaaina of Collective Justice, and Jonathan Speer. Brianna and Matthew facilitated a restorative process with Jonathan Speer, who advocated for restorative justice instead of punishment for the person who caused him harm. Brianna's background is in somatics, trauma work, and gender-based violence. She's a survivor herself and facilitated the process alongside Matt, who is formerly incarcerated and also a survivor. So I'm going to start by asking Brianna and Matthew to describe the work you do with Collective Justice. We've had other Collective Justice staff people on our show, so our listeners have heard a little bit about Collective Justice before, an amazing organization up in the Pacific Northwest. So I'm going to start with you both and ask you about your backgrounds, what brought you to this work, and why do you work for Collective Justice? What's your vision? What's your goal? And if you could, as part of that process, define for our listeners what restorative and transformative justice means to you. So Brianna, we'll start with you.
Thanks for having me. Great to be here. So what brings me to the work? Well, I am a survivor myself, as you said, and really came up as a young adult with a lot of other survivors. And we were building community and we were thinking together about particularly how to resist and end gender-based violence. And what I found was that the survivors that I was organizing with and in community with, we really didn't go towards the criminal legal system to address our experiences. And I think there were a few reasons for that that really brought me to the path of what was called community accountability work at the time, and then transformative justice work, and then restorative justice work more recently for me. Really that, like, as survivors, we didn't intuitively feel drawn to a criminal legal approach. I think the deep vulnerability of the work, what I've learned over years as a restorative justice and transformative justice facilitator, of how to really hold the kind of space that people need around experiencing harm. I think we kind of saw and knew that the criminal legal system was not set up to hold that kind of space for us. And so that became a place where we really turned to each other. And we also were like, mostly we didn't want the people who hurt us to be punished. We wanted them to change. We wanted them to grow. They were often people we cared about, were in families with, or were in intimate partnerships with. And we wanted actually for them to change. And we saw again that the criminal legal system didn't facilitate that change. And then I also think another big piece that was present for us and for me that drew me to this work was really a political understanding of the ways that my experience and our experience as primarily white women had been really used to our victimization, or stories about our victimization had been really used to build up a really racist, classist criminal legal system that used our survivorship to actually build up this other system of oppression. And we really didn't want to recreate that and play into that, and really wanted to find ways to have our survivorship not be pitted against the survivorships of Black and Brown people. So that's some of what brought me to the work. And really, to me, restorative and transformative justice, what they are, that's a big question. And they both have deep and long lineages, but I think there's a lot of overlap and there's some divergence. But I think what I've learned a lot from restorative justice is that it is just fundamentally about relationship. How do we come back into a relationship-centered understanding of human life and how we move through hard things with each other? That we are fundamentally beings that need each other to survive, and we live inside of systems that obscure that and turn each other into enemies and opposites, and think that we survive by punishing and marginalizing each other rather than by learning how to heal together. And so restorative justice has taught me a lot about how we center relationship in our healing process. And transformative justice, I would just say quickly, for me is really about having an understanding of how to support survivors and those who've caused harm, but also really within a political understanding of the context of systems that create the roots of most harm in our society. And that if we're going to do interpersonal work around healing harm, we also need to be doing systemic work to shift the conditions that create harm.
Brianna, thank you so much. That is incredibly clear. And you've managed to put into the single conversation carceral feminism, the ways in which white supremacy has shaped the criminal legal system and has held up, you know, in particular kinds of stories of white women's survivorship. You've brought us to an understanding of sort of the political basis of systemic oppression and the ways in which that creates particular kinds of contexts that perhaps produce violence, which is then met with the violence of the carceral state. And you've talked a lot about centering healing in community, which of course carceral systems are the opposite of community, they're anti-community. And so I just wanted to kind of flag those things for our listeners, because these are themes that we've been hearing throughout this series that I think are so critically important to establishing what's some of the things that are wrong with the criminal legal system based response to harm, and some of the things that restorative justice and transformative justice point us towards. So Matthew, if I can come to you now and ask you the same question. What brought you to collective justice? Why does this seem like an appropriate or preferred response to harm for you? Tell us about some of your background.
As you said, I come to the work as a survivor of serious violence. I've lost people to gun violence. I continue to lose people to gun violence. And I'm also a second generation gang member. My father was a gang member. I'm the third person in my family to be incarcerated. My father was born in a prison in the 60s. He's currently in prison right now. Everyone that I grew up with, not everyone, but many folks who I grew up with have since walked on, having lost their lives to gun violence, or are incarcerated for perpetuating violence. And I just have a stake in the work. It's my kuleana, it's my responsibility to work to bring about, I would say, like, not new ways, but ways that we once knew, ways of my ancestors, of how we handled conflict, how we handled loss, how we handled grief, and how we transformed, you know, these things into things that are generative, and brought us back into, they call it lokahi in my language, which is balance in relationship, and back into relationship and connection with ourselves, with our safety, with our dignity, with our humanity, with our belonging within the community. And yeah, so I'm deeply committed into, you know, bringing forth these things, creating responses in the aftermath of serious violence. How do we hold each other? I would say I got my start in the work when I first went to prison at 17 years old. The people who go to prison are often from the same neighborhoods, and and the places where we have caused harm are with people that we are in direct relationship with or in close proximity of. And we all go to prison together. And, you know, where do you throw people away once you're in prison? You can't. You know, we've already been thrown away. So it was up to us to find a way to come back into relationship. You know, after having taken the life of a loved one who is now housed with you, of what is now your community, another community member. And yeah, so I was doing RJ before I knew it was RJ. You know, we were finding ways back to each other and back to meaning and purpose. And yes, yeah, surviving the prison industrial complex. And just say, like, we all have a stake in it, taking up my kuleana and my responsibility to do this work and be in the right relationship with each other.
Thanks so much, Matthew, for that. Can I follow up? I really appreciate that you referenced the Indigenous roots of being in right relationship with each other. And finding ways back to balance, back to safety, back to the sorts of community relationships that hold people and that allow people to handle conflict, loss, and grief. I'm wondering if you can say a little bit about what it means to you to be in right relationship. How do you define that? What does that look like?
So being in right relationship, the way that I was taught, I was raised by a Puyallup Muckshu, Tulalip family, the Lozhers and the Freibergs. And we have this teaching of all my relations. And that teaching is understanding that we are all in relationship together and we are all each other's relatives. And it is our responsibility to try and remain in harmony with each other, not placing anyone's well-being, their safety, agency, dignity, belonging above another. And when we step out of relationship or outside of those values, what are the ways that we can get back in right relationship? So in my Hawaiian culture, we have the Ho'oponopono, and we have part of that is a mihi ceremony. And within the mihi ceremony, you would stand before your community. Your community would gather when someone did something, caused harm to another person, or disrupted a place. And we would come together, and the mihi ceremony is, mihi is really, it's like apologizing and accounting for. So people who had deep care for you, your community members, who your well-being and their well-being, you know, relied upon each other, would come together, and we'd have this mihi ceremony where you would stand before your people and you would account for what you have done, what the impact was, what you imagine the impact was, and you would apologize to folks. And then folks would acknowledge you and they would welcome you back in.
Thank you, Matthew, for taking us through that. That's an incredible portrait of the origin of where the concept of restorative justice and basing healing and conflict resolution and community comes from. And so thank you for sharing that and your own background with us. I'm going to turn now to Jonathan Speer, the third guest today, who had gone to collective justice to ask for a restorative process in the wake of the harm that he experienced. So Jonathan, if you could share with us, why did you want this? Why were you interested in pursuing a restorative justice process? Why did you feel that the criminal legal system was not going to provide for you what you needed in the wake of the harm that you experienced?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So essentially, you know, we weren't planning on this happening. I was out gardening, got shot and paralyzed, and then we were just kind of thrown into the criminal legal system. You know, we were the defendants, not the defendants, we were the plaintiffs. And so essentially, we'd already had our first contact with the criminal legal system, and it felt pretty violent towards us. My wife was standing by my hospital bedside, and there were detectives asking her questions and, you know, hounding her all the time. And that didn't feel good. So with that being our first experience, and as well as just having heard how bad the criminal legal system has been, I think we wanted to pursue some sort of different avenue. Also, there was no point at which I thought that having this other person punished would provide healing to me. And that was really the focus of our efforts, was don't do something to this other person that is not in the interest of my healing. And that's one of the first things that we discovered when we came into restorative justice, is that it's very much survivor-centered, and it's all about the healing of the person who has been harmed. And that was one of the things that we really liked the most about it, and that we continue to like the most about it.
So the common wisdom is the criminal legal system gives victims healing by punishing the person who hurt them. And the common wisdom is victims want that, right? They want to see somebody pay, and I'm using scare quotes, right? Pay for what they've done. We have a governor in Maine who has said about people in prison, they need to pay for what they've done. She's a former prosecutor. And a lot of people agree with that viewpoint. And yet you are saying that gives me nothing. How does punishing, how does hurting somebody else offer me healing? I'm curious if you can talk just a little bit more about, did you come to this on your own? Were you exposed to restorative justice prior to it? Did your pathway through the criminal legal system offer you an opportunity for restorative justice? Like, how did you come to understand what your healing actually was going to depend on?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I don't think that I ever really had a sense of what restorative justice was. But fortunately, at the time when I was shot, we had a couple of housemates, one of whom was working for a nonprofit as a lawyer. And she had just read a book about restorative justice by Danielle Sered, which is great. And so as a virtue of that, she dug in to try to find restorative justice organizations and very fortunately came across Collective Justice. And so she was the one that made the initial connection for all of us, which was great. And similar to your experience in Maine, here in Yakima County, our Maine prosecutor is apparently like an elected position. And, you know, before I made my victim impact statement at the sentencing hearing, he commented, you know, you're going to hear all this other crazy stuff from this person, but at the end of the day, I sit in an elected seat and the people of Yakima want us to be hard on gun crime. And, you know, it was basically like, don't listen to this guy, which, you know, did not feel validating to me at all. Yeah, I felt very much cast aside and spurned in that moment. So all that to say, it was really nice to connect with Collective Justice. And yeah, it's been a really positive, pleasant, and healing experience.
Thank you. And thanks for your willingness to come on the show and talk about your experience. The book that Jonathan is referencing is by Danielle Sered, and it's called Until We Reckon. And all of the listeners should go read that book if you haven't already. Today, this is Justice Radio, and today our guests are Brianna Herman Brand and Matthew Kamaaina of Collective Justice out of the Pacific Northwest, and Jonathan Speer, who experienced gun violence and sought out his healing process through working with Collective Justice, with Brianna and Matthew, in a restorative approach. I'd like to circle back to Brianna and Matthew to ask you, how do you set yourselves up to facilitate or manage such an incredibly challenging process as what Jonathan has experienced that has obviously completely transformed his life? How do you begin to create a space that allows Jonathan to talk about what happened to him, that provides him with the healing that he is seeking from you, that he does not feel that he's getting from the criminal legal system? How do you know if you've been successful? What are your measures for assessing the work that you do? There's sort of a three-part question, and we'll take any part that you can share with us. If Brianna, you want to start and then pass it on to Matthew when you feel ready to.
Sure. How do we prepare ourselves? I mean, we really take an approach in Collective Justice, first of all, that we want our facilitators to be people who have lived experience of harm, of survivorship, of incarceration, of poverty, of racism, sexism. Like, we really believe deeply that the folks that are most well-equipped to hold space around these issues are the folks who've been directly impacted by them. And then with that, we do a lot of our own healing work. Like, we really recognize this isn't so much something we're doing for someone else. I mean, sure, of course, we're in service to our community, but like Matt said, we really hold it as our wholeness is impacted when anybody in our community is impacted. And so we really, with that, we really recognize that we need to do our own healing often and look at how we are carrying the impacts of trauma and harm. in order to prepare us to hold the kind of spaciousness that we need to hold the multiple perspectives and what often feels like contradictory needs inside of a process like this. So that's kind of our starting place. And I would say that, as Jonathan said, really, you know, we really are oriented towards honoring survivorship, really centering the agency of survivors, and really centering needs. Like, it's a really needs-based process. And we do the same thing with the folks who are responsible for causing harm, is really we enter into a conversation with them about how their needs have been impacted by the harm they've caused, the harm they've experienced, and how we can support them to meet those needs, and how community can support them to meet those needs. You know, it's one of the places where I just feel so angry at the criminal legal system's use of survivors, use of the pain of survivorship to build up punitive processes. Because really what I see is we have all these harmed people out here who have been sold a bill of goods, that this punishment is going to meet their needs, it's going to give them healing, and it doesn't. And they're out here open wounded for years, for decades. And to me, that is an indictment of the system, that folks have not been held well, and they have not been deeply listened to around what are the range of physical, emotional, financial, spiritual, communal needs that they have that just have never been tended to. So that's a big part of how we orient ourselves to hold the space. And I'll pass it to Matt for anything you want to add about how we hold the space or how we assess for having good outcomes in the space.
Thank you. I would just add, say the work for ourselves is, I don't believe it's any different than the work that we do with survivors or folks who have caused serious harm. We look to stand up the structures to care for ourselves and to build the networks of care, and to have intentional time and space to be in the questions of what that looks like, what we need, who could possibly be a part of that network of care, and sit in the questions of, you know, how have I been impacted? How have I impacted others? And we have a formalized process for that. And that's, you know, we just set out that intentional time to be together and to be in those questions. That's really our approach to it.
Thank you. Jonathan, turning to you, what was the experience like for you of going through the process? If you could sort of describe what you got from it, what you maybe didn't get from it, how it worked for you, maybe how it didn't work for you, what the challenges were, what the benefits were, and now reflecting back on it, what have you taken away from it?
Yeah. So to clarify, I am still kind of in the middle of it. We entered the process with Restorative Justice before the sentencing hearing, and Matt and Brianna came out to Yakima like twice a month for a few months to meet with the person who had caused me harm. And then some of those days they also met with us, which I would imagine was huge whiplash for them. But basically the person who caused me harm has just been transferred to Department of Corrections and has changed jurisdiction. So we're kind of in a different system of red tape at this point, which we're still trying to hack our way through to be able to continue meeting with them. And I think Matt and Brianna are, you know, going to continue meeting with them to see if we can culminate the process with, you know, an actual dialogue or something in person. Yeah, as I said earlier, I really felt brushed aside and minimized by the criminal legal system. And I really felt centered, and like it was what mattered to me was what mattered to the people in the room with Restorative Justice. It really felt like Matt and Brianna and my family were all there for me to, you know, really help support me through this difficult transition, this difficult process of, yeah, learning how to be in a new body and just be in the world differently. One of the things that the criminal legal system really fails at is that most cases go through a plea bargain and don't ever go to trial. And as such, the defendants are best served by knowing the least possible about their case, so that they don't incriminate themselves further. And so it wasn't until I read my victim impact statement at the sentencing hearing that the person who had shot me learned that we have a infant and, you know, she's now a toddler and that I was paralyzed and, you know, all this other stuff just wouldn't, you know, it's like this person wouldn't have known the impact of their actions if we had opted out of reading a victim impact statement or, you know, not included the restorative justice process. And so, you know, a lot of the notions that we sit on of like, oh, well, you just need to sit in prison and think about what you've done. It's like, that would be great if we told them what they did or if we told them about the impacts of their actions. But generally, we shelter them, we shield them from that information so that they don't further incriminate themselves. And yeah, essentially, the system, in my experience, has just seemed really broken. And, you know, essentially, anything could do better. You know, anybody who is really trying, I feel like could do better. And that's, you know, the least of the reasons why we chose to go with restorative justice, but it's also not an insignificant one. Just that the existing system is failing so badly.
Thank you for that, Jonathan. And again, thank you for sharing what has to have been a horrific experience for you. This is very interesting because we've had previous guests on the show that have talked about the adversarial nature of the criminal legal system and how the way that the system is currently set up pushes people to deny what they did or to lie about what they did or to, you know, be super defensive about it. And one of the things that you've just raised for us is the ways in which restorative justice helps people who have caused harm see those they have harmed as full human beings, right? As people who live full lives with families and to have that opportunity to actually engage in a human relationship that might enable them to reflect on the harm that they have caused in a very different way than reflecting on the harm they have caused through a lens of denying it or trying to, you know, defend it or justify it in some way. And that, of course, is the essence of the restorative justice approach is common humanity and trying to find our way back to each other, as Matthew has said, trying to find our way back into right relationships. So I hope the process continues. I hope we can cut through all that red tape and have the process continue and you get the healing that you need. And the person who caused you harm gets the growth that they need as well. Thank you all so much for joining us today. Also with thanks to bluesman Samuel James for his gift of music that opens and closes each episode in our series. And to Luke Brown and Aaron Pyle, our sound engineers. I'm Catherine Besteman, and we are Justice Radio.